children, time to awake from your sleep. Rise to a new day with each your soul to keep. Come, my children, time to awake from your sleep. Rise to a new day with each your soul.
Hello, and welcome to the Enlightened Medicine Show with Dr. Valerie Olmsted, the holographic physician. And before we get started, I would like to again mention our wonderful sponsor, Hydramay Skin Nutrition. If you haven't tried it yet, please do. They have some great products, and if you go to the website, hydramay.com, you can learn about the product and see what's available, see what kind of specials are on there. That's Hydramay, H-Y-D-R-A-M-E, or hydramay.com. Please do check that out. And tonight, I am going to be reading the last part of the book that I'm offering for free called Choose Your Doctor as If Your Life Depends on It. It does. And it's a short book. You can download it for free for at least the next month. And then we'll see where it goes after that. It's purposely short. You can read it in about an hour. If you're a speed reader, a lot less. And basically, it's common sense. And I had to laugh. A friend of mine said, yeah, somebody looked at it and said it was all common sense. Yeah. Duh. That's what it's about. It's common sense, intuition, and, you know, something that's a pretty easy read. There's anecdotal stories in it, basically to illustrate why you need to use your intuition and your common sense, which apparently is in fairly short supply in the lives of some people. So, anyway, it's free. Download it and send all your friends to the site also. The site is free800.us/choose-your-doctor-home. And again, that's free800.us, free800.us/choose-your-doctor-home. And I'm inviting everybody to do that. Please sign up for it rather than just passing copies around, because I'm not done with it totally. There will be revisions. I need to put more things in the appendix and the references and, you know, flesh it out and things like that. However, the basic information is done. So I hope that that will help you and yours and, you know, give you a little bit better feeling when you have to go to the doctor or go in for testing or surgeries. Because there's a lot you need to know that is pretty common sense, but if you don't know it, it can be a problem. So today I'm going to start off reading from Chapter 7, The Interview. So, how do I know if I found a good doctor, you ask? Well, you ask the right person. Your first feeling is usually the right feeling if your intuitional muscle is working correctly. When you meet your intended new physician, how do you feel? If you have a fearful butterflies in the pit of the stomach feeling, stay away. If the doctor oozes competence and friendliness, you score. If you're left with an, I don't know, feeling, be cautious. No matter how rushed your new doctor might be, you will still be able to get an inkling of what that person might mean in your life. For instance, how are you greeted when the doc enters the room? Do you get a handshake and direct eye contact and maybe a smile? Or are you treated brusquely, no eye contact, no touch, feeling like you're interrupting a very busy day full of people more important than you? Take the time to do your homework. After all, this person will have your life in his or her hands. What do you know about this new doctor? Ask for a biographical blurb. Find out what the mission statement is and what your new doctor is passionate about, professional-wise. Where did your doctor receive training? What specialty is featured? What research projects are currently being explored? What is your doctor's lifelong dream? Hint? If it's anything but practicing medicine and helping people, run! How does your physician approach your health? Aggressively, wishy-washy, conservatively, nonchalantly, or just as a job? If your doctor does not show any interest in you or your health, then you haven't found the right one yet. Too many physicians feel they must hold their patients away from them and not let them know anything about them. These kind of physicians usually don't want to know anything about you either. Danger, danger, Will Robinson. If they don't take the time to learn anything about your life, they will likely miss something very important. Case in point, A guy with high blood pressure on medications for that had no success with any blood pressure medications. He was a miner on one of those big tunnel boring machines. His pressure was climbing higher and higher. During a casual conversation about his work, he revealed that he didn't wear a dust mask and used a nasal spray several times a day. Asking what product he used revealed that it was not a saline or safe spray, but an over-the-counter allergy spray that raised blood pressure as a side effect. If the time hadn't been taken for friendly inquiry to learn about his job, that little factoid might have been missed, since he didn't declare it on the medications list. Stop the medication, switch to saline spray, voila, end of blood pressure problems. Scary when you think he might have stroked out from an over-the-counter spray he thought was safe. You know, just because you can buy it over the counter doesn't mean it's safe. You need to know about these things. Talking about one's home life can reveal lots of clues, too. Many times I've had patients with mysterious disease processes inadvertently spill the beans while discussing hobbies, extracurricular activities, and chaotic home lives. If the disease is especially mysterious, I like to go back to prenatal circumstances. Sometimes something that has plagued people for most of their lives can be traced back to a seemingly innocent occurrence in childhood. One guy I treated had mysterious problems all his life, worsening as he aged. It turns out he drank water from an evaporative cooler when he was 2 years old. A little antifungal botanical and homeopathic stuff cleaned up the problem. Another patient with daily headaches came in with severe allergies that the MG allergist had no success with. We talked about her childhood and the fact that her headaches started at age 2 and continually worsened. She's Italian. I asked, what happens at age 2? For Italians, that usually means you eat pasta. Lots and lots of pasta. She had type A blood. Since she had one parent of type A blood, which can eat that kind of stuff, and one of type O blood, which cannot, I theorized that she inherited the type O wheat allergy and took her off all wheat. Bingo, headaches gone. Her allergist said it can't be that simple and turned her back on her. She no longer goes to that doctor. Of course, she doesn't need to. Which brings me to the next part. If your physician is unwilling to discuss treatment options compatible with you and your lifestyle, you may have picked the wrong one. A doctor should be on your side and willing to help you put together a plan that works for you. What good does it do if you're given a medicine to take that you have trouble with? You end up not taking the medication. Oftentimes, people are afraid to tell the physician this kind of important information. For instance, if I prescribe a boatload of supplements in pill form to someone who has a terrible time swallowing pills, I am likely not to see that patient again. So, I prescribe liquids or creams and the patient is happy, and so am I. When I prescribe a dietary change for someone, my first question is about the foods they really love as well as the ones they hate. It doesn't do anyone much good to be given a diet they can't live with. If they have a craving for something that really isn't good for them, I show them how to work it into the diet so they don't feel deprived and still obtain the health benefits they need. The classic complaint I get from my type O patients is that they love breads and pastas. I commiserate with them, as I love those foods also. Then I show them how to get by without and use it as an occasional treat. Ask your new doctor how they intend to work with you, as a consultant on your team or as the dictator. Stay away from the dictators unless you enjoy giving up all control to another human being, even when they're wrong. Find out the details of your working relationship. Will your doctor be available to explain everything to you so you fully understand your options? There's also the question of attitude and demeanor. If your doctor treats you condescendingly as if you're a moron and he or she is an almighty genius, you might want to consider another doctor. The demeanor of a physician is important. Giving a patient the impression that everything is safe and the doctor is knowledgeable is part of the healing process. After all, how can you feel your healing if you have no confidence in your healer? Oh, and by the way, hypochondriacs, this does not apply to you. The most important thing you can do whenever you see a doctor is to be clear about what you want, what you intend to do to heal, and to understand your diagnosis and treatment plan. Do not be afraid to ask questions, but don't take up too much time either. I've had a few patients who took up inordinate amounts of my time just because they liked to hear me talk and they were very anxious people. It was amazing how much more focused they became when I informed them that I would be charging for each minute. Be sure you have your questions written down and that you're focused when you ask your doctor for more information. It is rare for a physician to have enough time to stand around waiting while a patient tries to remember what they wanted to ask. Then there are those who dash out the door as soon as you start to ask a question. Oftentimes a nurse will be able to answer the questions to your satisfaction. Just remember, the new physician is interviewing you. You should be interviewing them right back. My own standard introductory interview includes me answering questions as to how naturopathic medicine might help in that person's particular case, as well as giving my background information, mission statement, and mode of practice. Then I give my famous speech about not wasting my time and their money. I don't take every patient that walks in the door. They have to pass my interview. Because I spend a lot of time away from the office researching anything that might help my patients, I am just not willing to deal with those who refuse to take care of themselves. Nor will I take patients that are a giant pain in the you-know-what. Some prospective patients find my style too in-your-face confrontational. Not everyone is ready to deal with the truth, or even hear it for that matter. Make sure it's the right fit from the start. One very important thing to remember, you are paying for a service. You are paying for a professional service, which generally costs a lot because the practitioners of that service have big education bills. The practitioner must be licensed and have continuing up-to-date education. Perhaps you might like a list to help you in interviewing your doctor. Maybe something simple. A checklist where you can fill in the blanks. It's not difficult. I'll start you out with a standard list and you can add specific questions to it as you need. Determine whatever it is you need to make you feel comfortable in choosing a healthcare practitioner. Think carefully when adding your questions. Make sure they are short and to the point. Doctors hate roundabout, rambling questions and will usually be out the door before you have finished saying, So here's your physician interview checklist. Number one, what kind of training did you have? Number two, what kind of licenses do you have? Number three, how long have you been in practice and what has been the focus of your practice? Number four, have you treated many patients that have what I have? What have their outcomes been? Five, what is your style of communicating with your patients? What can I expect? Six, who will answer my questions during my care? Seven, what is your lifelong dream? In other words, what is important to have accomplished in this life? Number eight, do you feel we can work together to get me to better health quickly? Number nine, what would make your job easier in treating me? And then you can add your own questions. And at the bottom of that checklist, I have the overall feeling with this doctor. It's a little checkboxes: excellent, good, fair, poor. Now, this may seem very simplistic and very common sense, but you know what? Nobody has ever asked me those questions. Now, I may not be a surgeon, but, you know, if I tell you to do something that's not going to work, that could be a problem, especially if it's something that harms you. You might want to find out a few things about your doctor. You know, if they're not well-versed in caring for something that you have, that could be a problem, depending on what it is that you have. So you need to ask these questions, and you need to make sure that that doctor is going to perform in the way that you can work with them also. Chapter 8, Honesty is Still the Best Policy. The title of this chapter is more than just a trite saying. It is true. Some people may be wondering what the heck this chapter could possibly have to do with health issues. As you will come to see, honesty has a tremendous influence on your health status. How many of us have left out things we didn't want to admit to when talking with our doctor? Let us explore the reasons for such behavior, especially when we say, quote-unquote, we want good health. When you pick a physician to help you with a health challenge, don't you usually pick someone you feel some rapport with? After a few visits, do you look up to your doctor and respect him or her? So what happens when you've been given instructions by the doctor you trust, but have not acted upon those instructions yet? That's right, you lie. Oh, it's just a little white lie, you tell yourself. It doesn't really matter. Well, folks, I'm here to tell you that it does indeed matter, usually more than you realize. When a physician gives you instructions, they are usually not something that is a whim. The instructions you get are meant to help you in a specific area of health. For instance, if you're a diabetic and you're cheating on your 1,800-calorie ADA diet by maybe 1,000 calories, and most of those calories are from sweets, and you lie about how you're doing on your diet, your doctor may increase your insulin dosage. Then on the days when you decide to be good and not cheat, you have too much insulin in your blood. Many diabetics make this mistake, not realizing it can result in their death. Come the morning, you have very little blood sugar left and lots of insulin, which results in a hypoglycemic reaction. What this means is you don't wake up. If there's no one around to help you or nobody who knows the symptoms of insulin overdose, you will die when you run out of blood sugar. The brain needs two major components to survive, oxygen and sugar. When the brain goes offline, it's dramatic and scary. I offer this personal experience in the hopes it may help someone recognize the signs of a hypoglycemic reaction. Many years ago, I took a friend with me on a day trip to Los Angeles. It was about a 5-hour drive. Traffic was bad, resulting in our arrival somewhat later than we had planned. I knew he had to eat, being a diabetic. We found a seafood buffet and went in. I had gathered all I wanted on my plate and passed him as he went around the buffet. I saw he had very little on his plate. I passed him again a minute or so later as I went to get a drink. Nothing more had been added to his plate, and he was shuffling along around the buffet. I came by and said, "Can't decide what to eat?" And he grinned, laughed, and said, "No, ha, ha, ha." I thought that was a little strange. I mean, he was a little squirrely anyway, but I really thought that was a little strange. I went to sit down and kept an eye on him. He continued circling around the buffet and not picking anything up, going slower and slower. I jumped up, yelled at the waiter to bring a Coke fast, and grabbed him and made him sit down. I put a straw in the Coke, put it in his mouth, and yelled at him to drink. I pounded the table to startle him awake and made him drink. It took a few minutes, but by the time he had drank half the Coke, with more insistent yelling and table pounding from me, he started to come out of his dazed state. Then it was like a mini earthquake. His whole body did a shake. His head snapped up and his eyes cleared of the glazed look. He asked what had happened. Now, this was a guy who had a practice of shooting up more insulin than prescribed so he could eat sweets. A lot of diabetics make that same mistake, not realizing the increased dose really doesn't help and could actually kill them. We had a little discussion about his medication habits on the way home, as you might imagine. Now, the standard thing I find with my patients is they hate to tell me when they followed my instructions. I can always tell because they won't look me in the eye when I ask about them. One of my jobs as a doctor is to create a safe place for people to heal. Dishonesty has no place in my practice. I don't chastise. I tell them it's okay to tell me what happened. I'm on their side. Soon they realize there really is no point in hiding something from me since I will discover it anyway during my exam. They also discover I have no desire to place judgment on them. I realize there are many temptations out there, and part of our joy in life is to partake of what life has to offer. To that end, I don't believe in trying to restrict my patients. I educate them, tell them it's up to them, and let them handle themselves. After all, if you are too restricted in what you eat and do, you will soon think of nothing else and will feel deprived. That never leads to a good end. My goal is to help people discover what works for them and helps them be healthy. Open communication helps me to design a plan that works for them, a plan that allows for those little treats now and then. Another area that people tend to lie about concerns sex. Often I cannot get someone to open up to me about their sexual practices until we have established a rapport and a feeling of safety. Women often cry when they tell me about their abuse history. Many men do too. It really is important to know what happened, at least for a naturopathic doctor, because we use homeopathy, Bach flowers, and trauma relief therapies to help heal the old wounds. If I know a little about what happened, I can be extra gentle when doing the exam. Be sure to hug the patient afterwards and let them cry if they need to. This always becomes a catalytic experience for them, allowing them to purge emotional toxins and start healing from within. Any trauma relief therapist will tell you that our traumas become locked in our bodies, causing many physical symptoms that are removed during trauma relief therapy. Amazing things have happened with my trauma relief patients. Psychologists that are unfamiliar with the trauma relief therapies often can't understand how the patient is able to progress so quickly after a session. One such experience I had left me laughing. A woman who had been abused by her brother many, many years before asked me for the holographic memory resolution therapy. After a few sessions, I got a call from her psychologist who was amazed at her progress. He'd been working on her for years without that kind of success. I explained the procedure to him in total honesty. He couldn't believe that could be effective. He really struggled to understand. I offered to do a session with him, which he accepted. During the session, I was never once able to get him to say, "I'm doing this," or "This is happening to me," or "I feel." During the beginning of the session, I instructed him to be honest with himself. Every sentence that came from his mouth started with, "I'm imagining myself doing blah, blah, blah." The poor man was so uptight, he couldn't get anywhere with it and left feeling disappointed. It just goes to show that unless you're willing to be totally honest with yourself and drop the ego disguise, not much happens. Never mind how much schooling you've had or how many degrees are upon your wall. All that matters is that you face yourself 100% and be ready to deal with what happens next. In other words, get out of your head and into your heart. Another area people lie about is exercise. It's easy to get blood pressure and blood sugar down if you just exercise the appropriate amount. The reason you want to not only do the exercise prescribed, but also be honest about it is very important. If you tell your doctor you're doing as suggested, and your blood pressure or blood sugar is seemingly unaffected, you may be put on pharmaceutical drugs. Most people nowadays are familiar with the tremendous side effects, many very serious, associated with pharmaceutical drugs. Even worse, the new standards for blood pressure now would mean that most of the population would be put on antihypertensive medications. As soon as I heard the new standards, I realized the pharmaceutical industry isn't happy with the billions of dollars being raked in every year. Now they have created new standards requiring the majority of the population to take their poisons. My first response to this news was, "Bullshit! I wonder how much they paid the researchers, quote-unquote, to come up with that decision." So for those of you who have had the prior standard blood pressure of 120 over 80, the pharmaceutical industry and the AMA have decided that you are hypertensive and in desperate need of medication. The new standard is now 110 over 70, and I heard rumors that they're going down to 100 over 60. Go along now. Take your drugs like good little sheeple. Bah! Now, where were we? Ah, yes, exercise. Be totally honest with your physician when reporting what you're doing, especially if exercise has been prescribed to help alleviate a medical condition. By not following your instructions, you put yourself at risk not only to be given unnecessary medications, but also to be sent for tests. You see, we know what effects exercise will have on your body. So if you say you're doing it and the expected results are not happening, we presume you have something more serious going on. Remember, honesty is the best policy. When I worked in an emergency room many moons ago, we occasionally had people brought in for fainting. We had a few tests we would perform to discover if it was real or they were faking. I still remember a dancer who was brought in supposedly comatose. We picked up her arm, held over her face, and dropped it. Amazingly, she missed her face every time until we laughed and said, "Look at that, she misses her face every time. If she was really passed out, she'd hit her face." We then dropped her arm again, whereby she hit herself in the face. The moral is, don't go to the emergency room trying to fake a problem. You'll get caught every time. Now, some may think this is a cruel thing to do. That's okay. Think whatever you like. See again the title of this chapter. Please realize that medical professionals have little regard for people who are faking it. We will send you to a psychologist pronto. Then there's the question of honesty with your family. Many times I've been told not to tell the family what was going on. So many people are so afraid to let their family members know what's happening. If you are one of those, please get psychological help before you put your family through a certain hell. You do not save anyone any grief by not telling them. Secrecy robs your loved ones of the opportunity to help you or tell you how much they care about you. There are times, of course, when family should not be told, especially if they hate you. Please check with someone you trust as to whom should be told, and be honest with that person. In all things, honesty is important. Sometimes you may have to soft pedal it a bit, but it's still important. Hidden secrets carry a price. Who are you serving by not being honest? Chapter 9, Giving It a Fair Trial. Okay, so now you have chosen your doctor. How long do you keep going to decide if he or she is the right one for you? The usual schedule is one visit to do the history and physical exam and start to work on your health problem. The next few visits are to evaluate how you're doing and change anything that's necessary. By the time you've gotten to the fourth or fifth visit, you should have a pretty good idea about your relationship with your physician. Are you happy with how you're being treated? Have you made progress? How do you feel when talking with your doctor? Do you get your questions answered to your satisfaction? Let's say all of the above is positive except making progress. Did your physician tell you how long it might take to see results? If it has been that amount of time and you've done everything you've been instructed to do without results, maybe it's time to check out another physician. In my practice, patients see results within the first three visits, even when they have complicated diseases. If I have not made progress with them, I am the first to suggest they see another physician. In chronic disease, please realize it may have taken you 40 years to get into the mess you're in. That is, to get you to where you feel bad enough to go seek professional help. Men, this means you. In the case of a long-standing disease process, it may take up to a year to get 50% better and maybe a few more to get you to where you're humming along pretty well. Your doctor should be able to give you a best guess as to how long it will take. Most of my patients with chronic disease get the above prognosis. Most get better within the first 2 months, with most of the problems resolved within a year. Mind you, this does not count in genetic diseases, although we can usually get you to at least feel a little better. One of my more spectacular cases involved an elderly man in his late 60s who had several strokes over 10 years, leaving him with expressive aphasia, unable to speak, with some degree of receptive aphasia, unable to understand, and terrible burning pains in his feet. He had been given pharmaceutical drugs to no avail. He was also diabetic and had heart disease. His wife came in hoping I could help. She said his prognosis was bad and no one had any success stopping his pain. I told her it would take about a year to reverse most of the stroke damage. When I first examined him, his legs were black from the knees down, and he was a Caucasian and swollen. His heart sounded like a washing machine gone berserk. He continually threw his feet up in pain, which was obviously excruciating. After the exam, he was started on several nutraceuticals, as well as a pharmaceutical pain cream. See, I'm not against pharmacists or drugs when necessary. On his third visit, his legs were pink, pain reduced 50%, and legs no longer swollen. And then I noticed he had varicose veins, big ones. He was starting to be able to understand a little better, thanks to his wife's consistent efforts at home. His heart sounded normal. Within a year, he was understanding speech and speaking well enough to talk on the phone and to neighbors. He was walking every day and going farther each week. His kids were thrilled, as was his wife. Then he stubbed his toe while out walking and it got infected. I referred him to a podiatrist who put him in the hospital and cut off his infected toe. Within a week, he was no longer walking. Soon he was transferred to a skilled nursing facility where they fed him everything that was a blood type allergen to his type A blood. Soon he was no longer talking, and a few months later he died. What a waste! For patients like that, treatment is not easy. Natural supplements take time to take effect. This is why we still need pharmaceuticals, which, by the way, came from plants originally. He was kept on his normal drug regimen as the nutraceuticals were brought on board. We later stopped almost all of his pharmaceuticals. His wife worked tirelessly to stimulate his brain as we took him off the usual drugs and put him on nootropics, that's brain nutrition and medication. She cooked and fed him only the foods his type A blood did best with. The fact that he came back from such damage and did so well speaks well for naturopathic medicine and for his wife. Men, kiss your wives right now. Or as soon as you get back to them. They are constantly on watch to keep you well. Another patient came to me after 14 years of hell. She was an active middle-aged woman involved in lots of sports activities. She had a rare variant of tuberculosis, which is normally only found in the immunosuppressed. No one could figure out where she got it, but she had it bad enough that almost half of one lung was surgically removed. She had been on the strongest antibiotics available for the entire 14 years. When she came to see me, she had constant itching and diarrhea and asked if I could do anything to help. She wasn't expecting any change in her lung condition, which was bronchiectasis and pulmonary nodules, which are, quote-unquote, incurable. Within 2 days, both the itching and diarrhea had stopped, and we called it stopped officially after 2 weeks. Over the next several months, we worked on systemic candida brought on by the massive amount of antibiotics and steroids she was on, and the lung problems. She was getting quarterly CT scans because of the deteriorating condition of her lungs. Her next scan showed the bronchiectasis and the pulmonary nodules were gone. Gone. Her pulmonologist was shocked, but refused to listen to anything about natural medicine. Obviously, he couldn't believe that anything natural could have cured a quote-unquote incurable disease. As one of my mentors, Robert Geer Jr., D.C., NMD, once said, "The improbable takes 2 weeks. The impossible takes a little longer." My own view is that I will never give up as long as the patient is willing to work on it. I've been privileged to see quite a few supposed miraculous cures in my practice. All I can say about it is the body is a marvelous invention. If we can just remove the obstacles, the body will heal itself perfectly. If you're going to a physician and getting more and more medications with less and less relief, it may be time to pursue someone who understands and practices holistic medicine. That may be an NMD, an MD, an OMD, or a DO. If you're on Medicare, you need to seek an MD or a DO, or pay cash out of pocket for alternative healthcare practitioners. The important thing is you get the care you need. One patient had gone to 39 MDs in a year. She was actually blacklisted by the MDs. All she needed was a simple dietary change, and her headaches and gastric distress were gone. All they had to do was listen to her and examine the possible causes of headaches, and she could have been helped. We put her on a blood type diet, removed the offending foods, and whammo, cured. Another miracle. You'll be amazed how many of my patients tell me how little care they've gotten from their prior physicians and how they were never listened to. Sure, it takes a lot longer to really connect with someone, listen carefully, and examine what's happening in their daily routine. The payoff is being successful in helping them to heal. I love it when my patients tell me I saved their lives. I did a lot of that when I worked in the emergency room in the intensive care and cardiac care units, but this is much better. I get patients after they've been through the medical mill and have not been helped. Many of my colleagues have the same experience, leading most of us to really enjoy our chosen profession. The other thing to look for in a doctor is word-of-mouth referrals from people who have used that physician and been helped. Don't be afraid to ask your new doctor for referrals if you have any questions. You shop for everything else in your life, mostly things that matter little. Why not shop for the right doctor since the stakes are so huge? Also, look up the doctor's record at the state board office. Any complaints are logged as well as any investigations. Even though I do approve of a patient doing their homework, some people can get just a bit paranoid. One lady called me after she investigated me through the state board. After becoming my patient, she was afraid to give me a check for supplements in case I might be fraudulent. Sitting in my office, looking at my medical degrees and licenses on the wall, she worried about my legitimacy. It's usually a good hint that if someone has a valid license, an ad in the phone book, is a member of several professional organizations, and has an actual office, they're usually okay. Not always, but usually. I promised her I wasn't going to run off to Mexico with her money. Besides, there's only enough there to get close to the border, not across. Do your homework, your due diligence. Be sure you would feel comfortable having that physician totally responsible for your life. You never know when it might come to that. If you're in an accident, the physician on record is the one they call. Don't pick someone you would hate having make decisions about your health. Pick a doctor you know will take the responsibility of your care seriously. Pick someone you feel cares enough to be there for you and who will comfort your family. If your doctor says, "Call me anytime if you have questions or are worried," you've got a winner. This does not mean that you get the personal home phone or cell phone number. It means that when you leave a message on the answering service, the doctor will call you back as soon as possible and answer your questions. My only caveat is for those anxious patients, arsenicum types, who call every 5 minutes. You will not be called back soon. After a few emergency calls from warriors, the doc usually figures out the patient is only anxious and needs to chill out a bit. Personally, as much as I enjoy helping people, I have no desire to be disturbed continuously by nervous Nellies. If your doctor has guts, he or she will tell you if you're wasting endless time with useless questions and inform you that you will be charged for every such phone call. People tend to forget that doctors are trying to have a life too. We are not on call 24/7, and if we were, we'd probably be basket cases pretty soon. One so-called friend of mine gave a little old lady friend of hers my home phone number so she could set an appointment with me. Against my better judgment, my intuition, I accepted her as a patient. The woman would not listen to anything I said and started calling me at home. She called me at 3 a.m. to ask me a question about insurance billing. She called at 6 a.m. to ask me a question about the blood type diet. She called me on a Sunday afternoon, awakening me from a much-needed nap, to scream that she had an emergency and couldn't stop blood from gushing out of her nose. Half asleep, I leapt into the car and raced over to her house. She met me at the curb, Kleenex in hand, without any blood noted on her face and very little on the Kleenex. I spent 4 hours with her that day explaining to her, again, what she needed to do to keep her blood pressure down, when to call the doctor or emergency room, and answering a boatload of questions. I also explained to her that it was highly inappropriate to call a physician at home for the kinds of questions she wanted answered, and to make an appointment for such things or call during office hours. Since I had attempted many times to get this particular patient to understand she was crossing boundaries and had been ineffective at getting her to comply, I asked her to bring her daughter next time. When the daughter came to the next visit, I politely asked her to remind her mother about office hours and appropriate behavior. My patient continued to cross those boundaries. I called her back after another so-called emergency to find she had left the house but her daughter was there. I informed her that her mother needed to lose my home phone number and stop calling me at all hours or I would discharge her. The daughter begged me not to do that. One more inappropriate phone call, I informed her, and your mother is discharged. The patient didn't come for her next scheduled visit. I found out through the grapevine that she'd gone all over town telling everyone who would listen that I was a quote-unquote horrible doctor and that people should stay away from me. I gritted my teeth, growled, and went on with my life. Sometime later, one of the people I did business with told me very nicely that I needed to work on my business skills and treat people with kindness. Something told me that nasty patient had been talking with him. My comment that he must have heard from patient X was met with surprise as he confirmed my suspicions. We discussed the matter, and I asked him how he would feel if one of his clients behaved the way my patient had. "Why, that's abuse," he exclaimed. "I would drop her like a hot potato." Of course, he had only heard her side of the story, in which she left out those little pertinent details. Against my better judgment, again about a year later, I let her come back when she had a mysterious rash on her leg. Treated with antibiotics, natural and pharmaceutical, the rash was going away. But each time she came back, she related that she had dumped something really strange to it, which made no sense at all, since the treatment was working. When she told me she put a nitric acid wash on it, I told her to go see a dermatologist. From the beginning, I had suggested a dermatologist, which she had refused. That patient missed her appointments again, and she and her daughter did not return my phone calls. The next thing I heard from someone who heard her at the local beauty parlor was that she had cancer, and the dermatologist told her he would cut it out when it heals. Oh, my good God. First of all, if it was cancer, it wouldn't have been helped so immediately by the antibiotics. Secondly, cancer never heals by itself. Thirdly, there is no cutting out an area as big as a leg. There is only cutting off. Since having to deal with such a nightmare patient, I now interview my new patients before accepting them into my care. And now I have that country western song running through my head a lot. God is great, beer is good, people are crazy. Chapter 10, Further Tests and Referrals. Some people have an aversion to tests, especially when they're very expensive. It's that old need to feel something in your hands for all the money you put out, I guess. The other major aversion is the worry that the test will show something is terribly wrong. I've heard, "Doc, I'd really rather not know if something was wrong with me," a few times. At that point, I agree not to tell them if they really don't want to know, but I need the test to confirm my diagnosis and guide my treatments. Of course, the patient has to agree to do as I instruct, even if they don't know why they are doing it. Eventually, they want to know what the tests have shown. That is my preference every time. I need the patient to be actively involved in treatment. You know that old saying, what you don't know can't hurt you? Nowadays, we have discovered that it can indeed hurt or kill you. Sometimes the tests may reveal the need for more tests. Most of us do a standard screening panel with new patients consisting of a CBC, complete blood count, CMP or SMAC, complete metabolic panel or chemistry panel, lipid panel, cholesterol, triglycerides, HDL, LDL, VLDL, and risk ratio, and UA, urinalysis. This general screening is used to discover if anything is out of line or if further tests are needed. A lot can be revealed by the standard screening tests. We use a sort of algebraic logic to determine which path to go down next, the if-this-then-that logic. The lab test interpretation books are used in the manner of, if this and this are elevated and that is decreased, then these diseases should be investigated. Lab tests are not the be-all, end-all of the investigation. They just point to the general direction to be studied next. The physician's job is to determine what the combination of lab tests, physical exam history, and other tests, x-rays, ultrasound, CT scans, MRI, etc., mean. This is where the art of medicine comes in. Symptoms and tests can be interpreted in many ways. The good doctor guesses right most of the time. That's right, I said guess. Lots of diseases are found by using the SWAG method, scientific wild-ass guess. Many times when the doctor excuses him or herself from the room, it's to go into the office and grab a few books to try to decide what the heck is going on with the patient. If the books don't yield an answer, a colleague is only a phone call away. We bounce ideas off each other all the time. Before you become too shocked by this, please realize that doctors don't know everything. We do the best we can given the circumstances. I'm one of those who'll tell you if I have no clue what's going on with you. I'll tell you I need to research a bit and find the answer. I'm not about to pretend that I know it all. Things change in medicine daily. Things we did years ago have now been discovered to be the worst thing we could do. Doctors are being worn down by the vast amount of information and changes coming at them. You can always get a second or third opinion, too. If you feel unsure about the test results, go ask another physician. Most of us didn't go into medicine planning to devote ourselves 24/7 to the field. We thought we'd have a life, too. The ones who take no time for a life get worn down quickly. When you're worn out, you make mistakes. Personally, I detest making mistakes with someone else's life. That's the kind of thing that can keep one up at night. When a doctor orders certain tests for you, it's done to make the diagnosis more secure. We start on a hunch, swag, but it is an educated guess. We order tests to confirm or disprove the working diagnosis. One of the most interesting developments lately has been the use of total body scans, ultrasounds, and other tests that do not have to be ordered by the physician. I applaud the people who have made these means of testing available to the general public. Remember, I like it when people take charge of their own health. Most people instinctively know when something's wrong, except for hypochondriacs who are always worried that something is wrong. The public use of testing has brought quite a few people in for medical care before it's too late. The affordability of the tests is great, too. Oftentimes, the price is lower than I can get with my physician discount. Perhaps you would like to know, generally, what tests are ordered for what diseases. The standard screening tests apply for everyone, with other tests added for certain disease states. Diabetics can get a hemoglobin A1C, glycosylated hemoglobin, fructosamine level, glucose tolerance test, fasting and 2-hour postprandial glucose and insulin levels, anti-insulin antibody, electrolytes, specific gravity, and ketones in urine. Cardiac tests can be discovered. Diseases can be discovered with cardiac enzymes, troponin levels, anti-myocardial antibodies, transesophageal echocardiography, angiography, heart catheterization, electrocardium, cardiogram, EKG or ECG, Holter monitoring, thallium stress test, treadmill stress test, magnetic resonance imaging, MRI, perfusion scans, PET, and lipid panel. Kidney diseases can be found with fluorescent antibody study, radiography, that's a KUB x-ray, antiglomerular basement membrane antibody, BUN, creatinine, and that ratio, UA, urinalysis, phosphorus, LDH, creatinine clearance, total protein, calcium, glucose, lipid panel, uric acid, albumin, globulins, ultrasound, MRI. Autoimmune diseases can be discovered with total protein, protein electrophoresis of blood and urine, albumin, globulins, quantitative immunoglobulins, that's IgA, IgG, IgM, C3 and C4 component, total hemolytic complement, C-prime 1 esterase inhibitor, soluble amyloid beta protein precursor, thyroid antibody group, lymphocyte immunophenotyping, T and B cells, anti-smooth muscle antibody, anti-mitochondrial antibody, anti-scleroderma antibody, and too many more to mention. Please note that the tests mentioned are only some of the tests that might be ordered. This is in no way a complete listing. The fact is more and better tests are being developed each day. This is a good thing. I keep hoping that someday the practice and art of medicine will become the science of medicine. I'm sure there are more than a few docs out there that think we're already there. I have a tendency to burst into guffaws whenever I encounter one. Maybe one of my jobs is to take the blinders off some of them. If any of that type are reading this, before you attempt to blast me, remember that I have 30 years in the allopathic medical field, so I've seen enough to say what I've said. As far as I'm concerned, no one has the right to take advantage of a patient in need. Making that patient think you know everything, and it's all scientific, is taking advantage of them. There's no room for egos when a person's life is on the line. One of my patients had a family history on both sides of a genetic kidney disease. She had blood pressure problems and pain over one kidney. I referred her to a renal specialist who got pissy with me when I wanted to go in with her for the biopsy. She had become a friend and was terrified of going in alone. That egotistical moron doctor refused to let me go in after having agreed to it prior, wasting my day and leaving her in tears. Then the idiot biopsied the wrong kidney. Yeah, that's right. So he knew she didn't have the genetic disease, but still had no idea what was going on in the kidney that hurt her. His comment was, well, it doesn't really matter which kidney. Moron. She was on an herbal antihypertensive ACE inhibitor that had her blood pressure down to 130 over 88, and each time she went into her primary doctor, they shook their heads and tisked her and told her they wished she would go on the drugs they had. She finally gave up and took their drugs. Next visit, her blood pressure was 165 over 105, and they all agreed that was much better. The last I heard, she still had kidney pain and fatigue, and they still have no clue what's wrong. Even when the proper tests have been ordered, you still have to deal with the interpretation of those tests. Make sure you have a good interpreter. Remember, you are in charge of your health, not the doctor. With the internet full of so much medical advice, you should be able to find ample research material. Of course, having patients armed with lots of knowledge is not always easy on the doctor, especially if the patient is a worrier. Having dealt with many of those, my comment is usually that I will take the research they found, investigate it, and get back to them. None of us has all the time necessary to research as much as we'd like, so I welcome what my patients bring in. I do caution them not to try to self-diagnose, though. The ones who try to do that tend to become overly worried and imagine they have some terrible disease when it's usually something simple like a dietary allergy. When your physician tells you that certain tests are needed, he or she already has a pretty good idea what the problem might be. Ask your doctor what the tests are testing for, then go look it up on the internet or the library or ask friends. When you get the diagnosis, look that up. Be well informed about the course of the disease, prognosis, treatments available, etc. The well-informed patient is a nightmare for some doctors, but a blessing for others. Chapter 11, Gold, a Doctor You Can Trust. When you have found the doctor you trust, there are a few things you can do to maintain a trust relationship between you and that doctor. Finding the right doctor is not the end of the work. It's up to you to nurture the relationship. You've worked hard to find the right one. Pat yourself on the back for being persistent and knowing what you want. The rest is easy and involves somewhat the reverse of what you did to discover the right person. You have looked into the background, life mission, personality, and working style of your doctor. You have satisfied yourself that your health is in good hands. Rapport is building between you. Now you can relax, knowing you will be cared for in a manner that reduces stress for you and your family. But before you put that crown of laurel leaves on your head, it's time to consider what you can do to make the healing relationship better. First and foremost is to take an active part in your health plan. Most physicians really hate it when they come up with a brilliant plan and the patient just can't seem to get it together to follow the plan according to instructions. I can't speak for too many other doctors, but I really hate it when I see the patient suffering week after week and yet not doing anything on the plan. As I mentioned previously, there comes a point when I get to say, "You're fired." I cannot just take the money and keep my mouth shut. Yeah, I know some people would think I have no business mind when I act in such a manner. My integrity does not allow me to take a person's money when they are not improving. If I see a patient continuing to not be able to carry out the plan, some detective work on my part needs to happen. Usually I find a mental-emotional obstacle, most often from childhood trauma. The only other deep-down, somewhat hidden obstacle that I found is that of intended suicide. There have been a few patients in my practice that freaked out when they got so much better in a few weeks and fired me. Seems they didn't really want to get better. When I've investigated the reasons behind their actions by discussing the patient with the prior physicians, a pattern of suicidal self-talk is brought to light. The first red flag is the statement, "My family would be much better off without me." Sob. The minute I hear that one, the recommended next step is psychological counseling. For them, not me. How can you hope to get well if you feel you're not worthy of the care you receive? Good grief, there are too many people out there who have been wounded in childhood and told they're worthless. Even when we become adults, those hurtful words will still echo in our minds. And the feelings of shame and worthlessness come right back as if it just happened now. If you are one of those people, you need to work through it now before it destroys the many opportunities lined up for you to succeed. Please, you are worthy of good care and attention from good people and all the wonderful opportunities that come your way. If you were not worthy, the opportunities would not come to you, nor would the good people come to you. Remember, the physician is your consultant and teacher. That's all a healer really is. The body heals itself given the right circumstances. Surgery is, of course, a different matter, necessary surgery, that is. Most people have no idea how many really unnecessary surgeries are performed. When I worked in a CCU, care unit, we had a few physicians who routinely performed what we call the CABG 0.5. Roughly translated, that means they did not need open heart surgery. It was maybe about half required on one artery of the heart, not necessarily the most important one. Those patients in most cases could have reversed the condition by dietary changes, exercise, and/or chelation therapy. The favorite call of those types of surgeons is usually, "A chance to cut is a chance to cure." Since your healer has an educated opinion of how best to help you, it might be in your best interest to pay attention and do as recommended. Listen carefully and ask questions where your treatment plan is concerned. If you don't understand the reasoning, keep asking until you do understand. Remember, you are paying the doctor to help you. You deserve good treatment, which includes explanations as needed. You are the head of your health team, so make sure you understand the plan and agree to the direction you are taking. Another important thing to remember in nurturing your relationship with your doctor, do not lie about what you're doing or feeling. Most of the time we can tell when we're being served a plate full of lies. This usually leads to the doctor losing respect for the patient. Don't you lose respect for your doctor if he or she lies to you? Honesty is so important when dealing with health. Please understand that most of us have no desire to judge you. We just want to help you. By being honest, you give the doctor the best chance to help you and save time and frustration along the way. When I prescribe a certain diet, supplements, or treatment and it does not help, I sit back, scratch my head, and try to figure out what went wrong. In every case, there was either a lie or an omission on the part of the patient. When the truth finally came out, I was able to help get the patient back on track. Here's another stumbling block, being afraid to talk to the doctor. You may think your physician has so much more education than you, and he or she may. Underneath, though, we're all just people trying to get through life with some degree of happiness. Physicians feel pain, get frustrated and angry, grieve, bleed when cut, laugh when they find something funny, get sarcastic sometimes, and some go over the deep end and treat their patients horribly. The point is, we're all just people like everyone else. Hopefully, you do not run into a doctor who abuses patients like my friend did. A friend of mine had a sigmoidoscopy. As is customary during the procedure, she was given drugs to relax her. She remembers being given Demerol 3 times, which is not customary. Usually Versed or another calming muscle relaxant drug is given. During the procedure, the doctor stated that he was doing a much more thorough job than he had planned, and that he was doing a complete colonoscopy and taking 3 biopsies. She noted that there was no equipment being used for that procedure. During the whole time, he verbally abused her, making her feel like she'd been raped. He was so cruel and nasty to her, she was in tears. She cried all the rest of the day. Nurses came to her rescue as much as they could anyway and filed an incident report against that physician, stating that they had had numerous complaints against his behavior. Do not ever let a physician treat you without respect. No matter how bad his or her day has been or what they may be facing that scares them, there is no reason to be cruel to a patient. The exception is when the patient strikes out against the physician, then the kid gloves come off. Am I suggesting that the physician can then strike back? You bet I am. Too many years in hospitals, especially ERs, has made me realize that some people are just jerks or worse. Too many doctors and nurses have been maimed and killed by people behaving badly. As I told misbehaving patients in the ER who were shocked when I subdued them physically, I don't get paid to take abuse. Now, if this offends someone, too bad. I never claimed to be politically correct. I am alive and unmaimed. Having seen or heard of multiple instances of doctors and nurses being abused by mentally ill patients and sometimes killed, I would like to explain something to those who don't understand medical care. Every effort is made to not injure a crazed patient, but if it's not possible to subdue the patient without harm to the caregiver or others, it is perfectly acceptable to do whatever it takes to stop them from hurting the people. I don't blame the cops who shoot a crazed knife-wielding person. A person with a knife 20 feet away can get to you and slash you to death before you can even pull the trigger. It's a no-win situation. No matter what they do, the ones who stop the crazed person will be blamed. If they shoot a tranquilizer dart and the person is allergic, they get blamed for murder. Ditto using a stun gun, but with neurologic complications or death. Same thing with chokeholds. My comment to the general public is this. Until you have been face-to-face in a life-or-death situation, don't judge. When the armed person is finally subdued, they may get a visit to the local emergency room to ascertain their overall condition. Many times the violence is then centered on the staff of the ER. One busy holiday while working as the triage RN in an ER, a family traveling to another state brought the grandmother in. She had been constipated, so they decided a lot of laxative would work. Grandma pooped sooner than expected, all over herself in the car. Then she became disoriented. She arrived in the emergency room, continuing to discharge large amounts of liquid excrement. The ER was hopping that night, standing room only. Our custom was to send the triage nurse out every 30 minutes to announce what was happening and when we expected to get to the other people. The policy in every ER is that the most urgent cases go first, everyone else waits. If there's a heart attack or two, gunshot or stabbing victims, or any real emergency, expect to wait a long time. As was the policy, I advanced things to the people in the waiting room. At one point, the family got tired of having Grandma pooping in the waiting room and demanded that the clerk get her in immediately, followed by punching the female clerk hard in the nose. The clerk recovered, jumped up on the desk, and landed a solid punch in the face of the perpetrator. They then quieted down until we could get Grandma taken care of, who was busy pooping her brains out. Some friends once asked me if the show ER is realistic as we were watching the live docudrama they did. I had to admit that the chaos portrayed is pretty much the way it really is. If you have the misfortune of landing in an emergency room, you will usually find the staff witty and compassionate, as long as you aren't trying to rearrange portions of their anatomy. It used to be that your primary care physician would be called if you're going to be admitted and would come to the ER to see you and write orders for your care. That duty is now performed by hospitalists, doctors who work only in the hospital, which reminds me of a personal incident in a well-known hospital. During a gas poisoning episode 8 years prior to the date I was hospitalized, I had stress fractures in my feet and elsewhere. My intestines had gone into a non-absorption state, so my heart was stealing minerals from my bones to keep going. Prior to the osteoporosis, I had tiny feet with high arches. Now I have duck feet, flat and fan-shaped, and yes, I swim very well, thank you. I had started taking some supplements that reduced the swollen ankles I'd had for those 8 years, and a few days later, blood clots started moving from my foot up my right leg. Upon awakening, I wondered why my right groin was so sore. I thought back through the prior day's activities. Nope, no unusual exercise or injury. As I was undergoing a cranial sacral treatment, the clots busted loose and were in my right lung in less than a second. Let me tell you, that is a weird feeling. Long story short, the ER staff thought I was nuts, in spite of the fact that I announced that I am a physician. They refused to believe me until they did the tests and found out everything I told them was true. The bad part started when the hospitalists took over. They decided I had pneumonia despite having no fever, no consolidation, and no mucus. They gave me the two worst antibiotics for gallbladder sludging, which I promptly got. On the third day, I snarled at them and refused the drugs. It never occurred to them to check my temperature, lung sounds, percussion of my chest, and the fact that I had no mucus to spit up. At that point, I decided I needed my friend who was on staff at the hospital, the only naturopath on staff at a major medical center, as far as I know. He came in immediately, checked me out, ordered measures to help, and the hospitalist refused to honor his orders. He was on staff there, and she refused. She then proceeded to overdose me on a common anticoagulant, and I bled from just about everywhere. I told her I specifically wanted her to work with my doctor, and she said, thinking I didn't know any better apparently, "Oh, of course, I'd be glad to work with your doctor when you are discharged from the hospital." Yeah, right. But hospitalists only work in hospitals, not outside, so you never see them after you leave. Taking my care in my own hands, I called a few of my colleagues and had them bring me the natural supplements I needed. 2 days later, I was out of the hospital in spite of the fact that a few huge clots had traveled to my left lung during my stay. They insisted I stay on the anticoagulant. I threw it out and took natokinase, a natural clot buster, which is oral, which they think can't work, even though they know nothing about it. Now, if I had such a hard time in the hospital, what is the common person to do? That's right. Make sure you have a good doctor. And bring along an educated, observant friend if you are hospitalized. Any doctor who cares about your condition will keep a close eye on you. Some even stay awake nights trying to figure out what the problem might be. My friend who had the colonoscopy had such a doctor, an MD, who admitted to lying awake trying to figure out how to help her. During my friend's stay in the hospital, she got worse, not better, but they discharged her anyway. Took her a few days, but she got better at home on her own by taking her supplements and eating right. She loves her physician and trusts her implicitly because she knows her doctor cares about her and knows who she is. She got pretty much every test for her condition. They finally guessed it was a new medication she was on. Gee, what a surprise. Not. Sometimes I refer my patients to colleagues with other specialties. We co-treat to give the patients the best chance of recovery. I only pick those physicians who I know are really intelligent, compassionate, and have dogged determination to get patients well. As a result, my patients love the other doctor, too. They trust us and know we do everything we can to get them to a better state of health. I've often joked about how I could get them to do anything I ask now if they trust me. Yeah, we laugh a lot at my office. Laughter is part of my medical treatment, as is recognition of our common human condition. Hugs and sympathy are part of the practice, too. I prefer the old country doc atmosphere, and so do my patients. Respect your physician's privacy as much as possible. We work hard. And it's often frustrating and sad. I know many physicians have no life other than their practice. NMDs believe that it's healthy, and since we are the bastion of healthiness, we take the time we need to have healthy relationships, time off, and socializing. If your physician gives you the private office number or private cell phone number, do not abuse the privilege. Call if you have an emergency or to report changes as requested, but not just if you have a general question. I have no problem giving my cell phone number to my patients. They usually don't abuse the privilege, and if they do, they get the lecture. The ones who say, "Well, I thought I was up, so I thought I'd call you," get a not-so-nice reply from me. If I could reach through the phone and whack them upside the head then, I would. You know, somebody needs to invent a phone attachment that does just that. they'd have to use it to dial the number. We call it negative reinforcement. Our parents called it punishment. Many patients are now telling, or physicians are now telling their patients to go to the emergency room if they have a problem. This is because many are in solo practice and have no one to cover for them. After a few days of 24-hour activity, I don't think you'd want them taking care of you anyway. All of my patients get the emergency room lecture. If you have an emergency, call 911 or go to your nearest emergency room. Call me at the office later and tell me what happened. It's not that we can't treat some emergencies, it's just that we either are not well equipped for it or don't want the liability. The next thing is appreciation. If you are happy with something your doctor has done, please say so. Too often, people only complain and then forget the good times. We need praise too, especially many of us who really enjoy helping people. I love it when people tell me I saved their lives or changed their lives so much for the better. After all, why would you continue at a job where you never saw progress or were never thanked for a good job? People need nourishment on many levels, and that, although simple, is a big one. Oh, and doctors are not supposed to accept gifts over $25, so don't try to show your appreciation with expensive gifts. A simple thank you or a card and flowers or a small gift is enough. My best gift is seeing my patients healthy and happy. It has always seemed strange, though, that we tip wait staff, valets, delivery people, etc., who are bringing you something you bought. And when I worked as a nurse, never once did someone thank me for saving their life, which I did on a regular basis, sometimes when the doctor was not present or didn't know what to do. Hey, we all have to learn somehow. I did have one patient call me every night for a week complaining that I foiled her suicide attempt. I finally got disgusted and told her if she wanted to succeed, she should go somewhere no one would find her in time and do it right. She didn't call back until several months later when she called to thank me. The shock of what I said made her realize she really didn't want to die. She sought psychological help and was doing quite well. And yes, I did know what I was saying, as well as the effect it would have on her. Ah, I love it when a plan comes together. Thank you, A-Team. At this point, I have to admit that I've gotten away with saying a lot of things that most people would never dare say. When you speak the truth, it hits people right between the eyes and causes a change of great magnitude. Just be sure it's the real truth, not just your truth. One of my talents is getting past all the garbage and to the core quickly. They call me the catalytic healer. The way a patient builds rapport with me is to be honest and real, to be fully present in the body. Then the best work is accomplished with both of us acting as a team. Epilogue. Staying healthy or recovering from injury or disease is much more difficult now than it was even 50 years ago. Given the cutting-edge state of healthcare in the civilized areas of the world, that may seem strange. The truth is that the health of the people in civilized areas has fallen due to many factors: pollution, toxins, electromagnetic changes, poor food quality, and increasing stress. We in the USA may be tops in healthcare, but we are at the very bottom of the list in health. Does anyone see that as a problem? Many people are now hospitalized for things considered minor even 50 years ago. Sometimes those people never make it out of the hospital due to treatment errors and superinfections. It behooves each of us to take the best care of ourselves that we can, which includes shopping for the best doctor in preparation for difficult circumstances. This book was written in the hopes that the contents will help people to help themselves and to be able to approach the subject with confidence. Remember that you are responsible for your health and how you go about it. Be prepared. Okay, so there you have it. Like I said, it's a quick book you can read through very quickly, and it gives you what you need. So hopefully that will help you. Please do send your friends and family members and acquaintances to free800.us. And then you can download a copy of that book. That's what it's all about. It's all about helping. And I will have a print copy at some point. Right now it's just a simple download and it's free. And when I go to print, all those who have signed up through the website will be given a huge discount on the print copy. So that's another reason why I'd like to have everybody go and sign up through the website so that I can give you that offering. And, you know, we'll see where it goes from there. But now I've done something that I was kind of told to do by the spirits, you know, a long time ago, and started, but now it's finished. So I hope you've enjoyed it. I hope that it helps. And yes, it is common sense and intuition. And I've seen so many people be permanently damaged by the lack of those two things that I finally couldn't stand it anymore. And especially when I had an MD friend who was maimed by a colleague when she knew she shouldn't have gone in and let him do it. And she did it twice. She had intuition, she heard it, she felt it, and she ignored it. Tragic, really tragic. So, that's it for this week. And again, the show is brought to you by Hydramay Skin Nutrition, our wonderful sponsor. And if you haven't tried them, please do go to www.hydramay.com. That's HYDRAME.com. Check it out. And until next week, be happy, be healthy, and be who you really are. Nighty-night.
Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do